Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, so I definitely want to open up with questions, if there are any questions, Shabbos related anyway. Yes, ma'am.
Can you blow bubbles on Shabbat?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
What else can you do with kids on Shabbat? In summertime.
Summer afternoon, Shabbos afternoons can get very long. This is true. That's when you get into games and competitions and all that, all that kind of stuff. But Shabbos afternoons can
get... What about a water table?
A water?
Like the outdoor play things that have water in it and they're just like...
Playing in
water
it.
Gun.
So, no problem with that. Well, there's two potential problems. The main one is the grass underneath.
Oh, okay.
We discussed in the beginning. The second malacha is Zareya.
On a porch or a patio.
Yes. So, if it's running on concrete, cement, something like that, would not be a problem.
Okay.
If it is running off of a porch, which is then dripping on the grass, then it would really depend if something is growing under there, which almost around here. It's hard to find a spot where there's no kudzu, where there's no something.
Right.
Because we discussed, somewhere where something can't grow, there's no zareya issues. But practically speaking, in a place like Atlanta, that's hard to find.
What's a malacha?
The malacha is a creative activity that's prohibited. That's one of the 39 main categories.
Where does it come from, the word malacha?
Malacha itself is, I can't speak so much to the etymology of the word, but the word itself means... A forbidden activity, yeah. That section we have the sheets for you, but we have to go through that in a little more depth. So that would be one problem with water is the reservoir issue. The other potential issue we didn't discuss in this class is malabing, which is malacha number 13, I believe, which is getting fabric wet. And then you get into issues of schita, which we touched on already, which is wringing things out, squeezing things out, and is that laundering? It's not really laundering because it's dirty, not clean. But that would be the other potential issue. The main one would be vegetation.
Okay.
So you have to do it somewhere where it's really... Where the water runs off to is really not an issue, but certainly it can't anywhere around where they're going to be splashing and all that cannot
be. What about chalks?
What about
chalks?
No, that would be a kosave issue of writing. That'd be prohibited.
Games like cards.
I mean, it's not like permanent.
Cards would be good. Yeah.
Cards,
puzzles.
They want to play outside.
It gets challenging. And then at some point, educationally, we try and tell the boys not to play, boys, girls, not to play ball. At what age do you do that? I'm not quite sure. Depends on the kid.
Baseball, basketball.
Anything. We don't, at some point, at some age. If you don't want Shabbos to become, the baseball day.
They climb the tree also at Moradina.
Yeah, that you can't do.
Because those are the older kids, those aren't the little kids.
Right, so at some point, especially climbing a tree. I mean, playing baseball, if there's an Erev, is technically fine. It's just that there becomes an education issue at some point, they should stop. But climbing a tree is prohibited. So if they're four and they're just not going to listen, I wouldn't necessarily go there. But if they're 8 and 10, they can't do that. And that's where it gets tricky, because let's face it, what's wrong, what could be more American than for a little boy climbing a tree? That's, and they can't even see what the problem with it is. It's not a light, you're not killing anything, like just their concept of malacha doesn't fit, even our concept of malacha. But we know it's rabbinically prohibited. And
can you spray bugs outside?
Spray bugs, you can use off. Repellents.
Spray us.
But you certainly can't. You spray us. You certainly cannot use any insecticides.
To kill.
Right. You can spray insecticides before Shabbos, and then whatever, whatever happens on Shabbos is not your problem. But you can't spray anything on Shabbos that will kill it on, kill it on Shabbos.
Shoot. To kill it.
Yeah, I mean, these days you have all this mosquito, the gas, whatever, I don't know what the latest and the greatest technology is.
So if setting the bugs that up before Shabbos, can you kill it, right?
You can shoo them away.
No.
You can't, unless, we haven't gotten to this malacha yet, but unless a bug or an animal is dangerous, you can't kill it.
You could have less Nile. You don't know.
Yes.
You don't know.
That's when you take out the all, you know, you start using all.
It's not helping, actually.
Well, see, I carry an EpiPen because I'm allergic to bees, so I carry it to shul back and forth.
Really? Yeah. So that, you know, bee for you.
I'm allergic to bees,
and
so I carry an EpiPen. It's a
little shot.
Shot.
Oh, it's a shot. Okay. So it's like allergic. Right.
So I carry it to shul back and forth because I'm just. I mean, I've never had I've had issues, but not on Shabbos.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't go anywhere with that.
This is like a matter of life.
Right.
Know,
yeah. I've been to the emergency room twice.
Not fun.
They don't want to see me.
No. Yeah. So you certainly have to carry it wherever you go, and and then if there's a bee in your sukkah, that would be that's where already if you can't capture it, you know that's the best way to go. If you can't. Whatever means necessary to protect yourself. But that's an unusual case. Let's face it, thank God most of those, wasp is not pleasurable in any way, shape, or form. But it's not going to... my wife always argues that roaches should be like that because it causes mental anguish and despair. And all. But halacha doesn't go that far. Okay. If I'm not mistaken, we did not get to Meraki. We finished Tochen and medicines. Is that right?
Right.
We talk about the three types of tochen is number 8, which is grinding. And I don't know if I have that sheet there for you or not.
It is, but I don't know what it is.
That's it. That is tochen. You're holding it. I'm sorry, we did?
We did not do sifting.
We did not do sifting. Okay, that's exactly where I thought. So we finished 8, which again is tochen grinding. And the main topic there, just to refresh my memories, was all about medicines. And the three categories of people, healthy people, people who are sick, the flu, stomach virus, that kind of thing, and then people who are in life and danger, life and limb type of situation. And we talked about the first category being prohibited by the rabbis from using medicines, even though they're already ground. But the second category can certainly use any medications, and the third category can do anything to save someone's life or limb. If there's even a question that someone may be in danger, is not only permissible, but is required. Answer that question. I think I gave you my stories, overview stories of the fires and sukkah and talked about that.
So
different
like
category.
Being allergic to a bee or a wasp or something, and if it gets in the house.
Yes, that becomes a dangerous situation. Yeah.
I mean, could they kill the.
Yes. Okay. Yes. There's a true concern that this may lead to a trip to the emergency room and kill it.
Okay.
If it can be captured instead, then that's the better way to go, as we'll discuss. Later, not this year even, but capturing is not as problematic as killing. But certainly in your situation, if you need to, you just kill it.
And what happens if you kill it?
Just as far as...
Squish it like this.
I don't want to use your finger at a wasp, but...
Let's just say that happens, that you killed one of those bugs. When you walk in the water, what happens?
I mean, if you accidentally kill something?
Maybe intentional, let's say it,
Yeah,
reflex.
Right, reflex type of thing, with a mosquito or something. So the truth is, it's a reflex, and it's a rabbinic prohibition, for reasons we're not going to get into right now. There's not even, I won't worry about that. That goes in the category of misastic,
but
except
for if intentionally, what happens?
Yeah, well...
Should I pray more? Should I pay...
Yeah, tshuva in general, when a person makes a mistake, tshuva means asking Hashem to forgive us, trying harder next time, learning more about that particular halacha. Those are... but I wouldn't put that up there with the bees.
Okay.
Instinctively killing a bug is not... Again, we'll get into more specifics when we get to that topic. Okay, any other questions, practical... stuff that came up, coming up.
No.
Okay, so let's move into miraculous. We will not spend, as you can tell from the sheet, a lot of time on this. This is from the last sheets, the end of the last packet. This is test number 9. I don't think these pages are numbered. The one on the web, I did number. So all these sheets should be posted to the website. This is Miracade. The top of the page says A, uncomfortable but fully functioning. It's the end of the packet. And then the bottom is a new malacha. Actually, I'm looking at a different salad than you've got. I take that back.
Yeah.
I take that back.
Okay, which one is this?
I'm looking at the classic. And you're looking at the newer one. This is Tochein. Yep, exactly. And then the top of the page, I'm sorry, it says Merakid. Malacha Tes. Merakid. And then there's the bottom says sand sifter, sippy cup, and sifter.
Is it Merakid?
That's Merakid. Yep. You'd be familiar with that word from dancing. One of the famous songs at a wedding is Kates of Meraktim with Nehakala. How does one dance in front of the Kala? And what do you say? It's based on the Gemara. So dancing and sifting in a certain sense are the same thing. You're dancing all the flour and its refuse, whatever you want to call that, the junk that's in the flour apart from each other. That's where the word is much more commonly, dancing much more commonly than here. So the translation is sifting, which we Americans don't do as much anymore.
So when you dance, you sift.
So the step after, just going from where we were before, we were in Borer is, and the picture book really again illustrates the whole thing beautifully. After you finish separating out the rocks and stuff from the grains, you grind the grain, and then the sifting process is separating out the large pieces from the flour itself, the finer flour. Again, most Americans probably...
Is it apply like to the sandbox also on Shabbat?
Very good. Yes, it's coming up. That is... Yeah, that's our first example. Very good.
I'm just thinking about kids, so...
And you know what? Again, I should really look at the same sheet
that
you're looking at. Okay, so again, the translation we said is sifting. The definition is separating or removing unwanted items. It sounds very familiar. It sounds like Borer, number 7, we discussed a little while ago. Separating or removing of unwanted items via a sieve or other utensil. So again, it's separating or removing unwanted items via a sieve, sifter, I'm not even sure what all these terms mean, or other utensil. Again, in many other countries, this is much more of a common. We're spoiled here. It's all done for us. Okay, so that's the definition, the box there on the left. Translation and definition. So one more time, separating or removing unwanted items via a sieve, sifter, or other utensil. So this is very much like Borer, which we discussed again before separating, but this is specific to that process. So taking something... A classic case would be flour, and you use the sifter, and the smaller stuff falls to the bottom into your bag, into your bucket, whatever, and the refuse, the stuff you don't want, stays in the sifter. So it's borer, but with a very specific methodology. The examples of the applications are very short. Sand sifter is relatively common for us. That certainly would be prohibited. Take a sifter to the backyard, to the sandbox, and let the sand fall through and keep the rocks in the sifter. That would be an example of merakid and prohibited on Shabbos. That would be a no-no. Yes, ma'am.
Is the same like a litter box also?
Yes. Yes, another good example. Right. So to use the shovel or whatever it would be to... again, the lines between borer and merakid become very... grade, but certainly if it's involved that kind of activity, then yes, it would be marked. A sippy cup, another example that they mention here. A sippy cup, the thinking here is that it holds the pieces of, let's say, orange juice pulp or something like that from going through. That actually is not a problem of marked. That is not an issue of marked. Because it's not the intention. The intention really is simply to make sure the kid doesn't spill the orange juice all over the floor. So despite the fact certain things are being held back, that's really not called merakid, because again, it's just a normal way of drinking, a normal way of eating, and that is fine. That is not a problem of merakid. And then the last example here is a sifter for confectioner's sugar or anything like that is perfectly fine, because there, if you think about it, maybe a similar activity, but the goal is totally different. There you've got sugar, and you want to spread the sugar, similar to a salt shaker. You want to simply spread whatever is in the utensil. Your goal is not to separate. Your goal is to spread evenly or in a certain pattern or whatever. There's not two things you're trying to separate out. There's one item you're trying to deliver. It's a delivery system, not a separating methodology. So that and all of its similar cousins are not a problem at all. Specifically when you're separating out. Okay, again, litter box is a good example. Okay, any questions about that?
So how you clean the litter?
You don't clean on
Shabbos.
Before
exactly.
Shabbos.
Before Shabbos or after Shabbos?
Before Shabbos.
Exactly. You have
after
to wait.
Shabbos. It's okay, they can survive.
Yeah. That's fine. Yeah. So that's something like that would be, you know, before or after. Okay. That is Merakeh. The sneeze and nemesis. The next one, Lush, is quite a bit more practical. Not very long, but definitely more practical. This is Lush. This is Melacha number 10. And the translation is kneading. K-N-E-A-D-I-N-G. Kneading as in dough. This is the final step. This already is a process we're all very familiar with. And I am a beneficiary of every Shabbos. The definition is combining via a liquid of tiny particles into a semi-solid mass. How do you like that for a definition? So combining via a liquid of tiny particles into a semi-solid mass. Yeah, via. I don't know how people say it. But by way of, right. Right. Combining, using a liquid of tiny particles into a semi-solid mass. So again, that's combining, using a liquid or via liquid of tiny particles into a semi-solid mass. Of course, we're referring, the most classic case would be flour and water. Taking the water takes that flour, which is disparate parts, and binds together into a dough, into a batter. And we'll talk about the difference between a dough and a batter. That's the malacha of lush. And that is prohibited on Shabbos. We're going to see in a minute there's a couple ways around it. But that's the basic malacha. Okay, and then of course, just conceptually, the next malacha, which we're going to spend a lot of time on, number 11, is baking. You take what you've kneaded and you throw it in the oven. That's the next, the little end of this process.
I didn't understand lush exactly. So what is the difference?
So lush really, the definition is taking a picture of flour and water and pouring the two together, and you end up with the dough, you know,
yeah,
bread
but
dough.
But you don't do that.
So mixing those two
okay.
is prohibited on Shabbos.
Okay.
And we'll talk a little bit more about the actions at the next point. Question?
I just remember something. Can you use whipped cream in a can?
Yes.
For the ice cream and then put sprinkles on top for Shabbat?
Yes.
So it's okay, the colorful sprinkles?
Colorful sprinkles for sure, yeah. Oh. Yeah, absolutely. That's my favorite. No, that's fine.
I'm just, you know.
Preparing
for summer Shabbat.
That's for sure, right.
I'm just preparing for summer Shabbat.
I'm just hesitating. The sprinkles are for sure not a problem. The whipped cream
from a can,
right? I'm thinking maybe there are those who may say that is prohibited. I do remember them discussing that being a problem, and there's another issue which I meant to look into. I realized earlier today I had not. Oh, with Freitag and garlic. Yeah, I have to look into that.
Yeah, garlic. We're still doing without garlic, and we're like suffering. Especially my husband.
Well, garlic, I guess you want to use raw garlic, right? Garlic?
Yes.
Powdered garlic is
not
the same.
Powder doesn't do anything.
I hear you. You're right. You need
it's got to be the real stuff.
It has to be the real stuff.
I hear that. I mean, you can put it in, of course, before.
It's not the same.
Not the same. Okay. Okay, that's the extent of my culinary advice. okay, so the two steps, you just think about how this is done. you pour the liquid and the solid together in the same place, same bowl. And the second distinct step is mixing it somehow. By hand, by a machine, whatever it is. Those are the two steps that the halacha looks at, and we'll see in a moment why that's important to conceptualize. So again, step number one is simply placing the liquid and the solid in the same space. So pouring the flour and the water in the same bowl. As a specific example, that just pouring is step one, without discussing the halacha of it yet, just the practicality of the science. You got the liquid and the solid being poured together, that's step one, and step two is doing something actively to mix the two together. Whether it's a mix master or your hand, but you're doing something to bind them, to bring them together. There's two, we don't think about it when you're just baking, you just do it. But halachically, we do look at this. We have to distinguish. Now, the next point, ladies, is a little confusing because the sheet is there's a typo here. It says three permissible ways to knead or mix. That is really a mistake. It should say two permissible ways to knead and mix. And then, if you could change also, A is fine, but B should be B1 and C should be B2. Just to make things a little exciting. Mm-hmm. So again, it's two permissible ways. A is fine, B is B1, and C becomes B2. I got a little too excited there when I typed that up. So then we're going to have A, and then we're going to have two parts of B. Okay. So the first permissible way, as you might suspect, is not to make a dough, but instead, in cases where you can, to make a loose batter. If it's not a thick semi-solid, as in our definition, but if it's loose, it's runny, that already is not lush. That's not in the direction of lush, is specifically a bread dough type thing. And of course there's different consistencies and whatever, but certainly if it runs, right, the difference between dough and a batter is the dough sits there, you put it on the tray. Whereas a batter, you would never think of expecting to sit. I mean, it's just going to run all over the place. So that, and somewhere between there, again, the line between the two is not 100% clear, but once it's runny, it's not a problem of lush at all. So if one is making something which is normally thicker, and you leave out the thickening agent, or you add more water, or however you get there, if the result is something which is thinner, the immediate result, I should say, you can't go like, make thick and then thin it up. It has to be...
So like with the gravy.
The gravy.
Make it thick and, make it like you normally and then thin it out.
Right. I mean, we'll discuss in a moment. You can thin something, let's say, if you have something from before Shabbos, you can thin it on Shabbos.
Okay.
But you can't make it thick on Shabbos. That would be lush and then thin it out later. That doesn't work.
Would you need on Shabbos? Because you can't cook anything.
Dough.
Oatmeal?
No.
I look at my examples here. Oatmeal will be an example. We'll talk about it in a minute. Of something that you can make. We'll see how but that's an example. Instant oatmeal, for example. A thick oatmeal would be done normally would be prohibited in Shabbos.
Yes, but when you put hot water in the oatmeal, even first it's runny. Then
then I have something to do with changing the
consistency. Well, I mean, we'll see in a minute. Cooking is fine partially by changing consistency, and lush is certainly that also. You start with a liquid and a solid, you end up with this blob, a semi-solid, whatever you want to call it. So but changing consistency itself is not prohibited. If it fits into one of the categories, it's prohibited. If it's not doesn't fit, then the fact that something changes in Shabbos is not considered.
So like instant oatmeal, like in a packet.
Right.
When you open it and you have a hot water pot, so you put hot water in it.
Right.
So if it's real loose, it's okay and you can eat it?
If it's real loose, you can make oatmeal on Shabbos, yes.
You have to put a lot of water.
Okay, so then we get into the cooking issues, which I'm avoiding to a certain extent because of the next, we haven't gotten there yet, and that's five or six or seven sheets on that. But if it's, suffice it to say, there's a way to do it with, I mean, the simplest answer is a klishlishi. As long as the water is already in the third vessel, which we'll define that in a few minutes, then there's no cooking issue.
Okay.
There's no cooking issue. But it has to be done right. There's a rule and reg. But the main issue with oatmeal is going to be the most you know, challenging issue to avoid, let's put it that way, would be the lush issue, the kneading issue, and the most basic answer would be making sure it's very loose. Now, sure, the question is what's considered very loose, where do you draw the line? I saw some post-game write one should avoid making oatmeal in general on Shabbos because
if it's loose, it's not an oatmeal.
Right. It's like drinking your oatmeal, it's not so good. So one suspects most from people don't make oatmeal on Shabbos. That's probably a fair statement. Is it prohibited? If it's done right, the answer is no. Yes, ma'am.
So it's all right, though, to do something like make Kool-Aid or lemonade?
Absolutely. Yes.
Can you then take that mix that you've made, like the Kool-Aid, and freeze it into popsicle?
Good question. The answer is yes. Okay. Yes. Yes. And I think that's one of our examples.
And breakfast cereal?
Breakfast cereal is permissible. That's
you're
a great example. Because you're not... I mean, you're right. Breakfast cereal, if you let it sit long enough, becomes this gross mush. But your intention certainly in the get-go with your Cheerios and milk or whatever is not to make a mush. So that the solids and the liquids, you put them together because you want them together. But that doesn't mean they're one single solitary mass. That's certainly not your goal. With oatmeal, that's your goal. Your goal is to have this sticky, some people a little more water, some people a little less, but your goal is to have the sticky semi-solid. That's prohibited. But Cheerios would not be. No, generally not. Okay, so again, A of this is to mix enough liquid in here that you're not creating a dough, you're not creating a semi-solid mass, you're creating a batter which is relatively loose. So again, how often you can use that trick, I'm not quite sure. B1 and B2 are totally different direction. Here, you can make the same basic product with two changes. As long as two changes are used in the process, then you can make most batters, and I'm qualifying that, we'll see in a second. But number one is to reverse the normal order of how things are put together. So this is referring really to the step one we mentioned earlier. When you just pour them together, you reverse the order. So that if the norm is the solid goes in first and then liquid, on Shabbos, you would reverse that order. You'd put the liquid in first, and then the solid. That's B1. That's the first change that one would have to employ in order to make kneading permissible. So again, reversing the normal order of step one above, how you mix them physically together. If for some reason liquid normally goes in first, on Shabbos, you put the solid in first. I should mention the halacha assumes, if you don't know what is the norm, you didn't take a Gallup poll of all your neighbors, the halacha assumes solids going first on a normal basis, which I think we would all say that. It's less messy, whatever the reason is, but that's the norm. That solids going first and liquids. But if you never do that way, and every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, you put the liquids in first, so for you on Shabbos, you switch it. Okay. And then B2 is referring to the second step of the physically mixing the two together. Obviously, you're not using your mix master on Shabbos. You're using your hand, using a fork, using a spoon, something like that. So there, the actions would have to be done in a weird way. So there's two possibilities that Halacha describes of how to do this in a weird way. Either using a crisscross motion like this, instead of the normal circular motion, which is certainly much easier, doing a crisscross, which you got to be careful, because you do crisscross fast enough, it ends up being... Say again?
You can't, like, make letters or symbols or anything.
In your...
You can't do it on the window.
Right.
How is that? In batter or whatever?
Well, here your goal certainly is not to be... I mean, the writing on a windowsill, let's say, in a window that you're referring to, a smiley face, whatever, is the prohibition of writing. The goal there is to give a meaningful message. Here, that's not your goal. That's not your goal at all. Even if it ends up, you kind of see an X in there, that's not a problem. It's not considered a meaningful message. It's an interim step. That's not a problem. I definitely hear the question. So using a crisscross motion instead of a round motion, Which again, you got to be careful. You go too fast, it ends up being, you know, circular anyway. That's a problem. Or, you know, I honestly, yes, it was or. Okay, good. Stirring with the handle of the spoon or the knife. I think we discussed this. Yes, we discussed this back in Tochein with guacamole. Using the handle also is a permissible change, which in many ways is easier to do, I think, than the crisscross. So you need one or the other. B2 has two possibilities. So, again, B2 is using a crisscross action or using the handle of the implement, which you would never do on a Monday, as opposed to the bottom, you know, the regular bottom.
Can
so
you start with that handle?
And then you can do a circular. Okay. Yes. Yes. So to recap, you need either A, you end up with a very loose, your goal from the get-go is a very loose mixture, a batter, and that's not lush at all. It just removes it from lush, totally. Which we've touched on in different malachas. If you just avoid the situation, you can do it. I mean, that's because it's not the malacha.
With normal,
or,
with normal way of mixing.
With normal way of mixing, exactly. Yes. Yes. Yeah, A, you can do whatever you want because you start and finish with, you know, a liquid, basically. A liquid with stuff in it, as opposed to a solid. And then B requires both B1 and B2, that the pouring in to get, pouring them in the same place, let's say in the bowl, would be in a different order, and one of the other mixing issues, either crisscross or handle of the fork, handle of the spoon, handle of the knife. Okay? So, if you're using B, you definitely need two, you know, both elements. Yes, ma'am?
There's, if you have powder salad dressing mix.
Mm-hmm, sure.
So that's all right. So I mean,
that's
like
fine.
It says put in the water and then put in the
oil and all that stuff. That's
then
fine.
Put in the powder.
Yep.
So you don't have to change anything because
nope.
You're not making a solid.
Right. You could not, if you want to make some kind of Italian paste, that would be a problem. But, you know, smear it on chicken or something. That's out. You make that before Shabbos. But if the result, immediate result is a liquid, chocolate milk, someone mentioned Kool-Aid, all these types of things are not a problem because the end result is nothing like a bread dough.
Okay.
It's not a cousin, it's just
you
not.
You can make cacao, right?
Make a?
Cacao.
Chocolate.
Oh, chocolate.
Cocoa?
Yeah, chocolate milk?
Cocoa.
Yeah.
Cocoa.
Yeah. You can make hot chocolate, cold chocolate, iced tea from powder, all those types of things will be fine. As long as the result is a liquid or something akin to a liquid, you're totally fine. Yeah, it probably doesn't taste much better. Okay, so let's go through some of the applications. Flour and water, the first application we've already discussed several times, that is the classic case of lush, and of course it's prohibited on Shabbos. If for some reason you need something like, I mean, you know, that was we pointed out before, you can't bake it anyway, so no one's really tempted to make it. Oatmeal and water is one of the most practical examples. This is definitely a lush problem unless you do one of the above tricks. Oh, I wanted to mention also, let me just backtrack a little bit. When using B1 and B2, I believe, my memory is failing me and my notes are not clear on this, but I believe one should make it somewhat looser than... In other words, I don't think we'll go so far to say you can make a thick oatmeal just because you use B1 and B2. I remember Postkim saying, you know, don't do that. So I believe they do say that if it's a really thick, if the result is really thick, then one should not simply rely on B. You should make it thin, a little thinner. It's not a batter that's going to run, but it's a little bit thinner, and then you can use B1 and B2. Okay, so again, oatmeal and water certainly you certainly can make as long as it's liquidy. Use the shinuyim as long as it's, you know, you can use the changes of B of A or B. Liquids, we've touched on this already. If the result is a liquid, chocolate milk, all these examples we just gave, it's fine, not a problem at all, because there you're taking a solid, and yes, it's binding it to a certain extent, but it's not there. I mean, it's not the semi solid that's prohibited. It's a liquid with flavor. Yes. Okay. Great question. So, as we were talking about, like Kool-Aid, for example, full of carcinogenic food coloring that we all love so much. So that is a discussion on a tzoveya. Tzoveya is dyeing and coloring things. The short answer is not a problem. The longer answer we'll leave for later. But the short answer is not a problem.
Well,
Like,
because it's not permanent.
It's not permanent. Your goal is not really, although you like chocolate milk to look brown, that's not really, you know, it's not the classic toveya of taking fabric, taking white or gray, whatever the color wool was, and sticking it in dye. It's not really toveya.
I could say where the flower's water could be, if you're an artsy person, and you make salt, a flower clay for your kids to play with, you know,
You can't play.
Oh, good point. You mean that's just lush alone. That's a good point. Right, so to make
flowers,
that kind of clay would be a problem on Shabbos.
Marzipan? Like marzipan? They make flowers with the thing?
They make Play-Doh from the...
Yeah, I know. It's called marzipan.
That's the name.
It's an art.
Can you
play? No, not Play-Doh.
No. Play-Doh, clay, all those types of things are out on Shabbos. Right. Anything that holds its form would be prohibited to make to use on Shabbos. So again, Play-Doh is out.
Anything that holds its form, you said?
Anything like Play-Doh, clay, anything in that genre would be out on Shabbos. Yep. For a totally different reason. We'll get there. But
sounds like you're creating something.
Yeah, that's a form of certainly with clay we can readily see you're creating a new entity, but that's. Mamachek and Mamarech, Malacha we'll get to later, is smoothing and smearing and that type of thing. Okay, the next on our list, solid with some liquid. And I don't have any examples written in here. One second. Certainly, I'm trying to remember what I meant here, but certainly solid with some liquid, meaning it's not really binding them together, they're just wet. You know, ketchup with french fries, I'm like, that's not a lush issue at all. You're not creating a new entity, a new mass. You're just getting something moist or wet or salad dressing on salad. You know, none of those are issues. You're not binding the salad. It might be a little creamy and sticky.
Icing a cake you couldn't do.
Icing a cake is permissible. To make the icing would be a problem. If it's a thick icing, certainly. That might be a good example, actually. You know, thick icings and there's an icing that would pour. So to make an icing that pours on top of the cake is fine. To make a thicker, you know, your typical cake, like a spread, that would be, you would not be able to make that kind of icing on Shabbos. To spread any of icing on Shabbos is fine.
So if it's already in a container.
By
you know,
Pillsbury or whatever, OU, Alamo Parv even, that's to spread it on Shabbos is not a problem.
Okay.
Not a problem. You remember with back to Tochen, we talked about spreading, guacamole comes from avocados. So that we said you have to follow certain rules. This is a non-issue. If you're taking a processed food and spreading it, it's not a problem. Like peanut butter.
Spreading?
Tochen is grinding.
Grinding.
Yeah. So we talked about grinding down an avocado, for example, mixing up a couple of things here as an issue. But once something's already processed, peanut butter, frostings, all types of things made before Shabbos, you can use it any way you want. No restrictions at all. I mean, making peanut butter, for example, would be prohibited because of tochen. You're grinding down the peanuts to make the peanut butter, and you're mixing in the oils or whatever else is in it. That would be a problem with tochen, of lush. Cannot make peanut butter. I know you're all very upset. You can't make peanut butter. But that would be out.
We don't need peanut butter.
Don't need peanut butter? Wow. Okay, one of my kids.
Not Russian food.
I hear. Okay. So that would depend on Bishul. The change of form is a non-issue in foods, at least, but the process of warming it definitely is, and we'll talk about that. Yeah. Okay, the last one on this list is thinning out a salad. As we touched on earlier, that is fine. You have a thick whatever, and you want to add liquid to it, you have a thick whatever, and you want to add liquid to it to make it thinner, that is fine on Shabbos, because you're doing the opposite. If you think about it, you're doing the opposite of lush. Lush is binding it to become more dense, a higher viscosity, and here you're adding liquid, making it more less viscous, more pourable, more, that's totally fine. I think you have a good example, but I can't. Okay, that would be one, yeah. I'm going to use this wallpaper face.
But chocolate, like if you had a really thick chocolate you wanted to serve it, could you add
You could add water. Yep.
Okay,
so then you get into the visual issues. Hot and hot, you know, heating it up, we're going to talk about that.
Right.
Yeah, assuming visual is a non-issue.
It means like before you want to serve it, you know, you already took it out.
Right.
And it's too thick. You want to put from this thing, you know, water, mix it and just serve it.
That's not a problem.
Like you,
not a problem.
You know.
Yeah, there your goal is to thin. That's not a problem. Okay, thus ends lush. Okay. Everyone still okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Hold on to your hat. Here comes the fun part. Okay, so the next Malacha ladies, and we'll have to all make fun of Mrs. Krohn for not being here. Remember that class where she had 50 million questions about Lush. So hopefully she'll be here next time. What's that?
Lush.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
It's different kind of Lush. Okay, so the next Malacha, ladies, is the biggie. One of the biggies. There's a handful of the 39, there's the three or four that I call the biggies that are just involved and complicated and complex. And this is certainly one of them, without any question. Major works have been written on this particular Malacha. This is a Malacha of... I wrote it in there for you, yes. Of Ofeh and Bishul. Ofeh, the first one there. Do you have this packet?
This is
yes. The brand new one.
Yes.
So the first one, Ofeh, ladies, is baking. And the second is Bishul is cooking. Baking and cooking. Baking, of course, being dry. And cooking being wet. And we just say that in English. We don't think about necessarily what it means, but you bake, you know, you bake bread, you bake a cake, you cook noodles, you cook, you know, that kind of thing. Roasting is meat, but it's also dry. Anyway, the halacha talks in terms of Ofeh and of Bishul. Ofeh, because of these 11 steps that we're getting to bread, Ofeh is the classic term that is used in Mishnaic literature. At the first term, the baking term. At the same time, when we talk about it just in speech, we usually refer to it as Bishul. We usually just refer to of we're talking about the topic of Bishul, the second term. So they're interchangeable, really, in most of these conversations. They really are generally, and most of our issues on Shabbos will be Bishul as opposed to Ofeh. But again, for these purposes, for almost all of our conversation, those two terms are interchangeable. They are not one is not a tolda of the other. Just to be clear, they're both, this is a unique situation where they're somewhat different processes, but they're both considered the av being the major category. I think the list of 39 that I gave you has both of them listed there. So if someone, you know, if someone throws out either term, they're referring to both together. One is not an offshoot of the other, you know, at all. They're sisters. Okay, so that's the translation. Translation, again, is baking and cooking. The definition is using heat to change the nature or makeup of something. Using heat to change the nature or makeup of something. So again, one more time, the definition is using heat to change the nature or makeup of something. Now, the reason that definition is so broad is because there are applications of this which are not very practical, but are still visual. Melting down metals would be an example of visual that Rambam talks about. You and I, you know, it's not going to happen. But anything, you know, some things are going to need 1,000 degrees. But if you melt something down, you burn something, all those types of things, it are examples of visual. It's just not, you know, we talk about chicken and challah and tea, we don't talk in terms of other things. But just to understand, the malacha is much more broad than we might think. Okay, and then we get into different types of vessels. Now, I should preface this by saying, we've done this before, but especially in Bishul, I try my best to break down the steps into little bites, and then everything will come together and get really confusing. So if it's a little bit overly simple in the beginning, that's on purpose. That's because if we jump in the deep end, we will drown. Okay, so the first series of pictures, ladies, is of a pot on the fire, and that's called the first vessel, Kli Rishon, but a first vessel on the fire. Kli Rishon, yep. If you want to write it in Hebrew, it's a Kli Rishon. The Hebrew term is Al Gabe Ha'esh, on top of a fire. So it's a first vessel on the fire. First meaning it's the first thing. It's the starting point of this process, and it's going to be the hottest pot, the hottest type of vessel, of course. So it's the first vessel on the fire. The next one to your right is the first vessel off of the fire. You take the pot, you put it on the counter, you put it on a trivet, you put it somewhere. That already, it's the same pot, the same chalon pot, the same everything. 2 seconds ago it was on the fire, and now it is off the fire. That would be Kli Rishon Shehusar Me'al Ha'esh. And again, without a blackboard, it's hard to, remove. Kli Rishon Shehusar, that's been removed, Me'al Ha'esh, from the fire. So it's a first vessel that's removed from the fire. The third line that's your right is a second vessel, Kli Sheni, a second vessel. So it's one step removed already. You poured it from the pot into the serving bowl. It's a second vessel. And then the third vessel is the bowl itself. The next step over to your right is the bowl that you enjoy, individuals enjoy their soup or their chalon from. That's a Kli Shlishi, a third vessel.
Kli Ish.
Shlishi. Shlishi meaning third. Right. Yep. The last one on your right is a Kli Shlishi. So the first one's a Rishon, which means first vessel. The second vessel is a Kli Sheni, a second vessel. And the third is a Kli Shlishi. Kli is Chof, or Kof, Lamed Yod. I don't think the picture book has this in Hebrew. Okay, so again, just to recap, we have Kli Rishon on the Eish, on the fire, a Kli Rishon off of the fire, a Kli Sheni, a second vessel, and then a Kli Shlishi, a third vessel. And the further you are away from the heat source, the more you can do with it, the more lenient we're going to be with what you can put in it and how and who. And
so this last bowl, is that a person's bowl?
Can they're got eating from? Right?
Yep.
Okay.
They actually do have a picture on page 27.
Do they?
Yeah.
Get that picture. They just
right there.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Yeah, I remember that. Right, they do very similar. Yeah, you can pass it around.
The flame would be on the stove, so you would have the flame would be off underneath the pot. So
good question. Yeah, it's basically right there. If the
you could, let me see if I'm reading this right. If the pot is on the stove, but the burner is turned off, then you can serve from the pot directly to the Kli Shlishi.
That is a true statement, yes. I mean, you're jumping ahead of us a little bit,
right.
But yeah, that's a true statement. No, that's fine. What the point you're making is a very good one. If the fire is off, it's a Kli Rishon that's no longer on the fire. Meaning, the pot doesn't have to leave the fire can leave the pot. We don't care. It's just much more practical in Shabbos for the pot to leave the fire, because how are you going to get the fire, unless the fire goes out accidentally, or there's a timer, or a non-Jew shuts it, unless there's some other way to get that fire off. Generally speaking, the fire is staying where it is, and you're taking the pot away.
So that's what if the fire is covered?
We're going to get there, and why fire is covered and all that. But the bottom line is, if it's hot beyond a certain point, which almost always will be, right?
Can you serve it from there?
No. Again, we're mixing halacha and definitions, but yeah, when we get there, we'll see. Now, generally speaking, we avoid serving from a Kli Rishon on the fire. If you can't avoid it, there's ways of doing it. But generally speaking, the crockpots, the way they're designed now, are perfect. You take the whole thing out, you put it down, you serve. We'll discuss putting it back and not putting it back. But I remember my wife and I were first married, and we were cruising through a dollar store or something, and they were trying to get rid of crockpots. We were so excited in our first crockpot, and it was not removable. Little do we know to even look at it. So we, you know, thankfully crock pots are not expensive items. We didn't lose sleep over it. But we never used it. Because you can, but it's really not ideal. It's best just to...
Like with something else to hold the lid or something, isn't that something like if you take something from it, don't you have to...
Holding the pot. We'll discuss, yeah, when you need to do that.
The pot.
Yeah. Yeah. Very often you don't. There's no need for that. We'll discuss when, you know, when that's necessary. Okay, and then the next one down, ladies, same idea really, just different illustrations. An urn is a kli rishon on the fire. There's an element in the bottom of that urn, whether it's a fancy pump one or one of these simple, you know, stainless steel guys, it makes no difference. But an urn or anything like an urn, certainly permissible to use on Shabbos, but that, you should just know, is a first vessel on the fire. You pull the spigot, it goes into your cup, that's a kli sheni. It goes immediately into a second vessel. I use the urn example because an urn, there's no such thing as an urn on the fire or off the fire. I guess it's unless you unplug it. There's no such thing. You can't remove the urn from the urn. But once you pour it into the cup, it becomes a second vessel, and then you pour it from cup one to cup two, that becomes a third vessel. Which is why it's great, and again, we'll get into the halacha of this, but it's great Shabbos policy just to have a designated cup that sits under the urn, and that becomes your kli sheni. That's your designated kli sheni. It's your designated. No one uses that cup. It's just, it's there. It helps you remember.
So when
that,
you, like, hot, if you want a tea bag, you'd have to start with, there'd need to be a cup
mm-hmm.
that the water went into here. And then it would have to get transferred to another cup
right.
and then another cup?
No.
It would go from that cup to your cup.
That's it.
And then you can have tea.
Yep.
Right.
We have this argument, and we just never get clarity. So
yes, and I have okay. a feeling Shoshana doesn't make tea at all on Shabbos, right? Okay, so we'll get into that issue. That's one of the big debates in Hilchos Shabbos. Can you make tea from a tea bag, or do you have to do other methodologies? And
so, but it is, I mean, it's one of the things that is permissible. It's just according to how stringent you are about it.
Yeah. There's different opinions about that, but certainly no one will allow you to make tea like you normally would. You put,
right.
you know, normally you take a tea bag, you put it in the cup, and you start pouring water onto that tea bag.
Right.
Don't
right.
do that in Shabbos.
So if you just designate a cup to stay under the little spigot thing, that becomes
your sheni. Right. The urn is your rishon, that cup is your sheni, and then you pour into individual stuff. Now, I don't mean to say, I don't want to mix halacha and policy. The halacha does not require you to have a designated cup. There's no, you know, holiness in the cup or anything. It's just, you can grab a new one each time if you want. It's just, for, on a policy, practical level, it's great to have the guy sit there because then you know he's there and you remember to use it and all that kind of stuff.
I'm not clear. So you put it in the first cup and then you put it in the second cup, which is the cup you drink from. But you can keep a tea bag in the second cup and pour the other in?
Into, we'll discuss the details of that, but in the second cup you can make the tea, yes. But not in the first.
Okay.
Not in the first. That's an important distinction.
Yep.
Okay, let's stop here, ladies. Thank you very much. I hope you all have lots of questions next week. And we will, of course, meet next Monday.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.